Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Write Club. The first rule of Write Club is you don't talk about Write Club, but we'll make an exception in your time.
Hello, my name's Nicola Cairncross. Welcome to Write Club, the podcast for writers and readers everywhere. Today, I'm joined by the whole team, Steph, Pat, Heather, Teresa, and Linda.
Hello.
Hello. Hi.
This week on Write Club, Heather will be reading to us from her work in progress, after which we'll offer our comments and critique just as we do in our Write Club meetings. Pat is going to amuse, educate and or entertain, and then we're going to talk about audiobooks, how to get your book onto audio, whether to go straight to audio, all that good stuff. We're going to hear what Teresa and our guests are reading at the moment, but first Stephanie is going to ask us to
name the novel.
This is a book about remembrance. It centres on five cousins gathered in the heat of summer 1939 for an annual holiday at their aunt's house.
Don't know it.
Not yet.
Not me. You all know it. But anyway, okay. Clue number two. Given the author was 72 when she wrote the book, some of you may have been surprised by the amount of overt sexuality, especially the description of the ménage à trois with twin airmen.
Twin airmen?
I've missed this.
I'm sure it will.
Have to look it up.
No.
Okay, clue number three. Set in Cornwall, the patch of grass in front of the house stretches to the cliff
tops. Haven't read it, but I know it.
Not a clue.
The patch of fragrant grass that stretches to the tops. Yeah.
It's not in Cornwall, though.
Yes, it is.
Well, this one is. Well, I think when you said, you know, implied it was a bit risque and it was 1939, I had that inkling, and then the third clue, I think, gave it away. But I've never read it, but I have seen maybe one episode of the televised.
Heather's looking like she's it's nearly there.
Yeah, there's something going click, 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 click.
Okay, it's the, well, sorry.
Yes, yeah, the chamomile lawn, and I can't remember
by Mary Wesley.
Mary Wesley.
Well, that's really interesting, because my best friend Philippa owned the chamomile lawn house for a long time.
Well, there you go.
In Dartmouth.
That's fascinating. So it was in Cornwall.
That's not Cornwall. Yes. Dartmouth's not in Cornwall.
Well, it might not be, but the book was set in Cornwall.
It's very nearly Cornwall.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, I suppose it's on the borders, isn't it? But definitely Dartmouth is the location.
Down there somewhere.
Well, so she took her own house and then transported it to Cornwall for a story.
As writers do, they cheat all the time, don't they? It's like setting Zorba in Crete.
Yeah, no, good point. Yeah, good point.
Well, good one.
Good. I think. Mm.
As I promised, we're now going to listen to Heather read from her current work. Heather, take it away.
Okay. This, I hope, is the last story in my Railway Terries series. And then I'll actually do something with them and finish them. Mum, I need you. I need you here. Please come home. What's wrong? No answer, just a hollow tone of emptiness. I turned on the light and looked at my phone. There was Paul's number. I hadn't imagined it. I looked at the clock. It was 4 a.m. What on earth could he want at this time of night? I tried his number, but it went straight to voicemail. I sat on the edge of my bed, grabbed my iPad and started to search for a flight home. There was a flight at 6 a.m. Without considering the cost, I booked it. I knew if I left straight away, I could be at the airport on time. I pulled on jeans and a T-shirt and ran downstairs. On my way through the sitting room, I grabbed my passport, keys and handbag. I ran to my car and prayed that there was enough fuel to get me to the airport. What's happened? I asked the empty space around me. There was no answer. There was no one there to calm me down or tell me what to do. I had no plan, and as I drove down the dark, isolated roads, I realised the stupidity of leaving so quickly. What if I run off the edge of a cliff or hit a sheep in the road? My heartbeat felt off the scale, and my head was swimming with questions. Has Carol left him? Has he left her? Is he hurt? Oh my God, is Caroline hurt? Has someone died? The questions went on and on, each one more frightening than the last. I knew that I should stop and take a rest, but I couldn't risk missing the flight. The what-ifs of hundreds of awful scenarios were vying for attention in my head. I managed to get to the airport without incident, park the car and take the ticket. I grabbed my fleece from the back seat and ran over to security. I showed them the boarding pass and I was through in seconds. No questions about where I was going or why I had no luggage. Just a glance at the document on my phone and I was through. Now all I could do was sit and wait. I tried Paul's number over and over again, but it went through to voicemail each time. I thought about trying to contact my daughter Elizabeth, but I didn't think she would pick up the phone when she saw it was me. I was sure that my ex-husband would do the same or lecture me, accuse me of being melodramatic. As I paced around the gate, I noticed a vending machine filled with small packs of toiletries. I realised that I hadn't washed or cleaned my teeth. I scrabbled around in my purse and managed to gather enough small coins to feed the machine. Armed with supplies, I went in search of the ladies' room.
Lots of mysteries in there. Elizabeth won't pick up the phone.
Yeah, definitely some estrangement in the family there, isn't there?
Yeah. What's happened to Paul? I was annoyed with Paul because, you know, the phone immediately went straight to voicemail, and I thought, Paul, you know she's going to call back.
All I could think was that she had no underwear on.
Okay.
It doesn't actually say anywhere she wasn't wearing underwear before she got dressed, does it?
That's true, but it's one of those details that stopped me in my fictive flow.
Yes, yeah.
I will make a note to make sure she wears knickers.
On underwear.
I think it's really strong, and you've got the knack of creating that sense of panic. And I think there was, you know, the good control of the pace, I thought was very good.
Yeah. Thank you. I thought it was a great opening, straight into the action.
Mm-hmm.
So no preamble of I was lying in bed and the phone rang and I jerked awake or anything.
Yes,
that.
No, you're there.
You're absolutely there in the middle of it happening. There's a couple of places where I think you've told us, you said my heartbeat felt off the scale, which is great, and my head was swimming with questions, and then you give us all the questions. And if you just said my heartbeat fell off the scales, then listed the questions. Yeah. You could at the end say my head was swimming with questions, or it might just be redundant that you don't need to tell us because you show us very, very well.
Right.
As we're talking about that section, can I?
Yes.
I thought my heartbeat felt off the scale was a little bit weak.
Yes, and I realised that. I must admit, when I said it.
Yeah, that's interesting that when you read it.
Yeah.
So I thought thump, pump, pounded, something a bit stronger would work there. Mm. And I also thought, your internal questions don't need speech marks, but that's not a big point. But the repeated question marks doesn't feel great to me. And I think when you read it, maybe it didn't feel good to you. And I thought perhaps you could reconfigure some of them as sentences. Please God, I hope Caroline isn't hurt, for example, rather than is Caroline hurt? Something like that. That was just my feeling.
Yeah,
on
please
that
God,
section.
Don't let it be Caroline.
Yeah.
And that will tell us that Caroline is more important than Paul and Carol.
Yeah.
I'm assuming Caroline's the granddaughter.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I thought it was certainly a cliffhanger beginning. You've really set it up, so we have to read a little further to know what's happened to all of these people. And I want to know why Elizabeth won't pick up the phone when her mother calls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did think also about the beginning, that it was a really compelling opening line, that nothing before it. So absolutely out there by itself with space before and after, and it just really is a moment of panic, you can see that. So I thought that was very good.
I thought the way she was manifesting her anxiety by worrying about crashing into a sheep and all the things that go wrong, that's exactly what I do. So it's very, very believable and real.
Good job.
I thought when you say she didn't think Elizabeth would pick up the phone, and then I was sure that my ex-husband would do the same. Well, it's not. It sounds a bit wrong because it's Elizabeth not doing something. So I just thought something like my ex-husband would ignore me too, or something. You know, slightly rephrasing that. Mm-hmm. And I noticed when you were reading it, you quite often say, "I managed to." But that could be her personality. That's how she speaks and thinks. But you know, that's a common thing.
Yes, I thought that. I got to the airport without incident. And it's park the car and take a ticket.
That doesn't sound panicky enough.
Okay.
But, you know, I managed to get to the airport without incident, park the car and take a ticket.
Space.
Yeah, but, you know, I screeched into a space, ignoring the white lines.
Yeah.
Snatched a ticket. rather than taking a ticket, snatching a ticket sounds more urgent, doesn't it? Right. So, but no, I think, you know, it's it's great. We've got the sense there's a panic going on and she's anxious. Yeah. And I get the pacing around the gate because I remember having to go home in a hurry and I could not sit still.
No, the biggest
agony was when I had to sit on the plane and fasten my seatbelt and not move.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to, I was almost like, I'll start running and the plane can pick me up when it passes, you know, because I just felt the need to keep moving. It's awful. Yeah. So I do identify with the that feeling, the pacing.
No, it's excellent. And also none of the, you know, out of date technology. You've got the, you know, your boarding pass on your phone, which is good, you know, because we're all, you know, some of the stuff I've been in reading on online about people using old technology all the time. Bring it up to date, you know, and also about older women not being, you know, being a cliche of older women who don't use technology, which of course we all exemplify the opposite.
Exactly. I actually had to stop reading a book the other day because the it was so out of date on the technology. They didn't even have mobile phones in it. And
well, I've read one from the 1990s, but I think it was written in that era, and you keep thinking, oh, they don't have mobile phones and there's no DNA technology or whatever. Yeah, it's interesting.
Cool. Thank you very much, Hibble.
Well done.
Thank you.
Yes.
So, thank you.
Pat, are you ready to enlighten, amuse or educate us?
Okay, well, we're in September. And you know, I used to, when I was teaching, it might sound strange to say it, but I actually used to quite look forward to September, you know, starting the new year. You always have that sort of sense of anticipation. Yeah, like new pencil case, like with the kids. But anyway, so it got me thinking about September. And most people know that September was originally the seventh month of the Roman calendar because the Latin word septem means seven, and we get that root in all sorts of things. What I didn't realise was that the first month of the year was actually March, close to the vernal equinox, until perhaps as late as 451 BC.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Julius Caesar who reformed the calendar. And the year was really weird. They had different length months and one really, really long month. But what he did was lengthen them and rearrange them a little bit so that they filled up the whole 365-day period. And after that, the fifth and sixth months, which had originally been called Quintilis and Sextilis, were renamed after him and after his successor, Augustus. So July and August. And I think most people thought that September was the seventh month and then it became the ninth month when July and August were added in.
Shoved in, that's what I thought.
That's what I thought too.
Not so. When the British changed from the Julian calendar to the Gregorian calendar in 1752, even though it's the ninth month, the name was retained. But when they changed the calendar this time, they needed to adjust some days to get the seasons aligned with the months. So they took 11 days from the month of September, jumping directly from September the 3rd to the 14th. Weird. So now it's as if the days between September the 3rd and the 13th during 1752 never happened in British history.
Oh, what a brilliant, useless piece of information.
So there's some other quite interesting things that have happened in September. 14th of September 1752 was the first day of the Gregorian calendar in Britain. On the 13th of September in 1902, Harry Jackson became the first person in Britain to be convicted on fingerprint evidence.
Ooh.
Of particular interest to us literary types, on the 18th of September in 1709, it was the birth of Samuel Johnson, compiler of the first English dictionary.
Mm-hmm.
22nd of September 1735, politics is very much in the air at the moment, that was the date of Britain's first ever Prime Minister, Sir Robert Walpole, moving into 10 Downing Street. But of particular interest to all of us, on September the 16th in 1620, the Mayflower ship departed from England, bound for America, with 102 passengers and a small crew. The ship weathered dangerous Atlantic storms and reached Provincetown, Massachusetts on November the 21st, and the pilgrims disembarked at Plymouth on December the 26th. And if they hadn't, who knows whether or not we'd have ever encountered Linda.
I thought you were going to say the potato.
And the potato.
I don't know which is more important to me. It's like daddy or chips.
Chips. Yeah. Chips. Linda. Chips.
I did go aboard that ship. I did go aboard the Mayflower.
Oh, did you?
Plymouth, Massachusetts, because there's
no. You weren't on the original set.
No, in 1620.
Well, I know you're ancient.
No, it wasn't the original, but it was a facsimile, I guess. But is that a word I can use with you, or are you going to get upset with facsimile model or a copy?
Facsimile is absolutely fine.
Okay. But I wondered when I went to, down from top deck into second deck, there's not really enough room for a grown-up to stand up straight. And I also wondered about using the bathroom, because how can you, there's no rooms of privacy. They're all
over the side or buckets.
Yeah. Mm.
But buckets, but they're crowds of people.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. You had a big skirt, though. That was a good thing. You had a voluminous skirt. But that's just the way it was, Linda. It's the same if you're in the if you're in Hampshire in England ever. The Portsmouth Dockyards has several wonderful museums there, including you can go on board the HMS Victory, which is an early 19th century ship. And again, I'm 5 foot nothing, and I have to crouch to go down there.
And you'll find Nelson's cot on the Victory.
Really?
You would barely think it was big enough for a child.
Mm. Isn't that amazing?
Thank you very much, Pat. And now we're going to be talking about audiobooks. And we have talked about this quite regularly because we all say that Linda should go straight to audio. And indeed, I've done a bit of research on audiobooks generally. And the good news is that literally, look, just last week, my own book, The Money Gym, went straight onto Audible. Well, straight onto Audible. It was a bit of a job to get it there. But I want to tell you some of my tips, top tips for having done it. So I thought I'd start with a mini quiz. Who here listens to audio generally?
Me.
Radio. Me. Yeah, you're a big radio buff.
Radio and podcasts.
Yeah.
And audio books, actually.
I have Audible books a lot.
Radio, talk radio, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Occasionally.
Yeah, I'm a highly visual person, so I don't naturally. But I have trained myself to listen to podcasts because some of the stuff I want to access is there. And it's passive listening, they call it, where you can walk the dog, do the ironing, do the washing up, whatever, as well as listening. So you specifically said you listen to audiobooks as well, Steph.
Yes, I do, when I'm driving.
Do you have a subscription so that you can
I have one a month, one book a month.
Okay.
And when I'm driving and when I'm travelling or driving, I...
And is that fiction or non-fiction you listen to mostly? Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah. We used to have cassettes in the car back in the day. When our children were small and we had a whole collection of, horror stories, classic, children's version of the classic horror stories that we used to listen to in the car.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yes, I have heard the same story over and over and over again in the car.
Yeah. And how important is the narration to you? Do you prefer narrators that you don't know their voices of or ones that you do?
I don't feel strongly. I do care about the narration. It needs to be good. It's nice if they can dramatise you. If it's an actor, it's usually very well done, but it doesn't need to be a famous actor to be well done.
No, I agree with that. I don't feel strongly. I think when it comes to autobiography, it's good if the actual writer reads it.
Mm.
I haven't listened to Becoming Michelle Obama, but I'm told that the fact that she narrates it makes it. Yeah. But no, I don't feel strongly about the narrator. What I do feel strongly about is that the narrator's voice has to be clear and kind of in keeping with the tone of the book.
Yes, yes.
So, yeah. I have a lot of problems with narrators. I have stopped listening to books if I find that I'm not identifying with this kind of person who's narrating the book. I really look a lot when I'm choosing to see if the person who wrote the book is reading it, because they put feeling and accent what really needs to be. Mm-hmm. And I love when someone does that. Mm-hmm. So it matters to me. And I always...
You couldn't have Stephen Fry reading Train Spotting, could you? That wouldn't work. It needs to be somebody with who can at least convey a working class Edinburgh accent.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I remember listening to Lenny Henry reading My Name is Leon, which is about a little boy who was in the care system. And, you know, Lenny Henry's a grown man, but he was able to put the child's feeling into his voice without not being Lenny Henry and not being a man. It was fascinating how he did that.
Oh, really interesting.
Well, I mean, would you be interested to learn that 30% of the population is made up of auditory learners who learn best through hearing? And that explains why I struggled at school so much, because there was a lot of listening and not enough drawing on the blackboard for me.
Right.
But an auditory learner will soak up the information they hear and remember up to 75% of it. Wow, so it's a really effective way of learning if you can do it.
But if you think about it, before there were books, before there was reading and writing, that is how everything was transmitted. Yep. Storytelling, that's exactly what it was, storytelling. Yeah. So perhaps we are naturally...
geared.
More attuned to learning in an auditory way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I have learnt to enjoy listening to stories from being in the group with you guys. You know, I can imagine what, you know, I have to shut my eyes sometimes just to cut down on the visual stimulation, but I can listen to a story and enjoy it now. Mm. Would you be interested to know that Audible are one of the biggest employers of actors?
Wow.
Worldwide now.
That's fantastic.
That doesn't surprise me, but that is fantastic.
Yeah, because you get a choice when you go to put your book onto Audible. You can either read it or you can hire a producer or an actor and or a tech person. Uh-huh. So they've got it really well set up. So
just let me, can I clarify that? So say anybody wants to put a book on Audible.
Yeah.
They can just do it.
Yes.
They can just do it.
Yes.
Or they can hire a professional team. Or
you can hire one of the professional teams.
Yeah.
So you can either hire a producer to organise it all for you. You can just hire an actor to read it for you.
Right.
And that's done through the ACX platform, which is what the Audible platform's called. Or you can upload your own recordings. And I've got some tips on, because that's what I did.
You've done it all yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Brilliant. Well, it's fascinating to know that you can just do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's free, completely free. It's a bit like putting your books on Amazon, completely free. The thing is, I did these recordings a long time ago, and I was in a room surrounded by clothes. It's in my best friend's attic, and she had lots of her old clothes up there, and I didn't realise, but that was an absolutely perfect environment, because we know from our podcast recordings, don't we, that sometimes we struggle with echo, and there was no echo on that. But I did have to go through it all and chop out things like aeroplanes and birds and stuff like that. So there's quite a lot. The editing is an extremely painful process, and actually listening
to
yourself.
But unless you start off by recording it in a studio or environment,
if you have a basement or something where you can block out the sound.
Yeah.
They are very well. I'll come back to one of the tips. There's a few more interesting things here. Amazon bought Audible for 300 million back in 2008 because they realised it was getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Audible is now the United States' largest audiobook producer. They produce 10,000 titles a year, and they are the largest employer of actors in New York City particularly. Total audiobook sales doubled to 2.5 billion over the last 5 years.
Oh my goodness.
And it's got a clear example in the e-book boom that preceded it. So Amazon saw it coming, basically. Uh-huh. Most of the major publishers have their own audio divisions now. But an interesting side effect of the rise of audio is that smaller publishers benefit from the wrangling, because a lot of the times the Audible will make exclusive offers which are really high. So a small publisher is much more likely to sign your book if you've got the audio rights, because they know they can go straight to Audible and make some money.
We did a show some months ago last year when we talked to people about whether or not to use Audible, and we discussed that then, because there'd been a big debate among the publishing, because publishers were trying to buy all the rights to all of it, and the agents were saying no, the audio rights are a separate thing, as like the television rights are a separate thing. You know, the print book is one thing, but
don't sign it all away too easily. Just to clarify, I'm not sure I understood what you're saying there, Nicola. So you're saying small publishers are in a better position.
They're more likely to sign a book for publishing
if you haven't already done the audio.
If you haven't already done the audio,
got
because
it.
They've
okay.
got a chance then to go and negotiate an exclusive deal with Audible, and they'll pay a lot more money. So that makes it more commercially viable for the publisher.
Okay.
70% of audio sales are fiction. Mm-hmm. It's very, very which is I found astonishing. Mm. Genres predominating. So, you know, books that are in a clear genre do really well. Double digit year on year subscriber growth. So
this is for Audible.
Yeah. But obviously it's probably representative across the industry. And subscribers typically buy 5 books on top of the 12 included with their membership. So they want more than one a month. So, which is interesting.
Now, I must say, I do occasionally look at a book and think I'll have Whisper Sync with it, just for people that may not know. Whisper Sync, again, is a brand name. But what it means is you have the e-book and you have the recording, and if you're on Kindle, for example, your e-reader device will know where you are in the book and your Audible device will know, so that you can switch between the two seamlessly. And very often, if you're buying online through somebody like Amazon, they will say, do you want to add Whisper Sync for $3.99 or a relatively small amount? Mm-hmm. And if it's relatively small, I will sometimes do that, because that gives me particularly when I'm travelling, I can read the book on the plane and then plug my phone in when I get to the car and, you know, carry on listening to the same story rather than reading several books at once.
Can I ask, how much do the actors get paid? Doing
I think they're standard rates.
There will be union rates. They'll be paid.
I was just thinking.
Stephen Fry will get paid a lot more.
Yes. But there will be equity.
That's where my head was going. Is that if you pick somebody like Stephen Fry, it could make it terribly expensive, couldn't it?
Yeah.
You wouldn't be able to afford it, would you?
I wouldn't.
And Stephen Fry might not be prepared to read your book, that's the other thing. It's a two-way street.
Yeah. Oh, I think he'd want to.
I don't think he'd be available as a gun for hire generally.
No, exactly.
I was just wondering about the cost, that was all.
I worked with someone who wrote blog posts as a marketing method, and we hired an out-of-work actor every week to read those blog posts out, because he had the most beautiful voice. Mm-hmm. And he was very inexpensive. It didn't take him long. It was a nice little learner for him, and it turned our blog posts into audio, which was amazing.
Used to read audiobooks.
Yeah. We have a friend who's made a career of that and done it, you know, living in Europe and working in the US, in fact, with a little home studio doing audio work.
Do you want to know the most popular titles, audiobook titles?
Yes. Go on.
Last year, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, number one.
No surprise there, then.
A Game of Thrones, number two.
I am surprised by that, but we'll come back to that. Okay.
Game of Thrones, number two. Now, this is an interesting one. Born a Crime, Stories from a South African Childhood, written and read by Trevor Noah. And I had never heard of that, but it's an Audible exclusive.
I know Trevor Noah, though.
Oh,
yes.
Do you?
Okay. Yeah.
So it seems like, you know, to be up there number three after the other two.
It's really interesting. Yeah. When I say I know him, I don't mean I know him personally. I mean, I've seen him on TV. He's a South African comedian.
But it's obviously an American list, because it's the Philosopher's Stone in England.
Yes. Oh, okay. And like, the number four is The Martian. And number five surprised me as well, which I have read, and on your recommendation, Teresa, Ready Player One.
Right.
It's amazing. A sci-fi book. It wasn't you.
Looking bewildered. Ready Player One is not one I've read, but I have read some good sci-fi books.
Yeah.
That surprises me, because one of the things that I found in looking into audio, I've used a couple of people. One is Joanna Penn. Do you remember? She's got top 10 tips for audiobook success on her website, and a radio specialist who has moved into audiobooks, and they both say that the best kind of books for audio are books that don't have too much complexity, and that you should simplify your writing for audiobooks. Now, to me, the Harry Potter books have so many different characters. See, with a textbook or an e-book, if you sort of think, oh, who is that? You can flip back a few pages and find them.
Right.
Or you can search for the name to go back and remind yourself of who they are and where they fit in. That's much more difficult in audiobooks.
Yeah.
And also with audiobooks, you tend to be, as you say, you tend to be doing something else while you're listening to them.
Yeah.
Because I find if I'm just listening to them, I fall asleep.
That's an interesting point. What we're talking about with audiobooks is basically the book being read, not adapted, as often on the radio we listen to things adapted for the radio. But we're just talking about straight reading of books.
So I was going to ask you, I've never listened to a fiction book at all. I can't imagine doing that for fun at all. Do they do voices for each character, or do they just read it straight?
Some do, some don't.
Yeah. I mean, so Stephen Fry, somebody like that, will do the voices.
Yeah, and sometimes you'll get, if you know, if you've got somebody with a Scottish accent, you'll get an attempt at a Scottish accent. But no, it varies. Mm-hmm. That's what, because I looked at the top books. I looked at a Telegraph list of the top books, and one of the top books of all time, according to the Telegraph, was a John le Carré book.
Right.
And they're full of detail. Mm. Yes. Yeah. Full of detail. Yes, yeah. And every time I don't read a lot of John le Carré, but I have read a few to study certain writing techniques. And every time I've had to flip back a few pages to check, you know,
Political thrillers are quite dense, generally,
and,
aren't they?
And the fact that some people can absorb them all just by listening to them, I find...
And retain 75% of it, apparently.
I find that remarkable. So I'm not sure if they're the top sellers because kids are lazy and don't want to read it, or parents think by giving the kids the audio book... Mm. You know, they'll
somehow... Well, it saves them reading a bedtime story.
Well, maybe.
Yeah, and also, you know, as I say, in the olden days, we used audio cassettes on long journeys. Right. And for long journeys, and if you can't read in the car, which many people can't read in the car, it's a way of keeping them entertained.
Mm. Yeah. I have always loved listening to things in the car, and I do listen to podcasts, and I have to be particularly careful because if someone's got an Australian accent, I find that sends me to sleep even faster because it's such a soft accent.
Yes,
you know,
and
listening to it at night is. I often have to go back and find the place in the podcast where I was and have three attempts at it. But I have managed to listen to, I don't know, 200 episodes of the Story Grid on podcasts. So when I'm motivated to get the information, I can do it.
Right. Yeah, I think for non-fiction. For instructional books, it's a completely different thing to what we're doing, isn't it, with fiction?
Yes.
Well, my daughter listens to audiobooks every night in bed, and I was thinking about this, and I was thinking about the advantages over reading in bed. So for one thing, if you're reading, you need the light on.
Yeah.
And
unless you have an e-reader that has a backlight.
Okay, And in my case, I need to wear my reading glasses, and I can't read lying flat. Uh-huh. So if I'm reading in bed and I start to fall asleep, I then have to take my glasses off, switch the light off, reposition myself, by which time I'm awake again. I can see the advantage of lying in the dark, just listening to a story and drifting.
That would send you off a lot quicker, wouldn't it?
Well, I've done that a few times, and then I realised... I have to, in the morning, I have to go back and find where it was just before I went to sleep.
Because I don't know how that works. I don't know how that works. You must have to rewind a bit.
Yeah.
So the things I've learnt by doing it myself is that it can seem a little bit daunting, but it's actually really easy and intuitive. And there aren't, you know, if you've done the recording, you've done 99% of it, really. The thing you then have to do is to download a little bit of software, and it tells you how to do this on the site, and you have to just encode your MP3s or whatever format you've got them in, which just literally means selecting them and following the instructions about two little settings, and then it turns them out in the right format to upload to Audible. You have to have, this was a, oh my God, I had to go back and do it all the editing again just to get this right. You need 1 second of room noise at the beginning.
Right.
And you need 3 to 5 seconds of room noise at the end of each section.
Right.
So that's so that the listener knows that you're moving on to another section.
Right. Yeah.
You need to say things like chapter one, chapter two. You need to upload the chapters separately with the room noise at the beginning and end. And that's really as complicated as it gets. Those were the most painful bits for me.
Right.
And then I had to record The Money Gym by Nicola Cairncross, narrated by Nicola Cairncross. And then I had at the end to say the end, which is a bare minimum. And then you can have a call to action to come and visit your website or your Facebook page or whatever. But the tricky bit was getting those two bits recorded because, first of all, I had a fan noise, which I couldn't work out was the overhead fan or the computer fan. Then I had to do it with the fridge turned off because it picked up the fridge noise. And they're very strict about background noise on Audible. They want a really good experience for the listener. And then I had to do it on my phone away from my computer because the computer fan was being picked up by my microphone.
But if you put your microphone, if you get a box and you line it with towels, yeah, and you put your microphone inside the box and you put your face at the level of the box, that will cut out all of the background noise with the towels. Marvellous.
Stephanie and I have experimented with this and it works. That must be hilarious. We had to take turns putting our face near the box.
Yeah,
it was fine.
And what was this for, may I ask?
Oh, that's a private matter.
Okay, so then what happens once you finally get accepted? They do email you to tell you, but it goes into promotion, so I didn't notice it at first. But then you get 100 coupon, unique coupon numbers, 50 for the USA and 50 for the UK, and you get to give those out to people, and each one is unique, so you can only give it to one person. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that you get as many reviews as you can as quickly as mm-hmm. possible, honest reviews, presumably. And but I have made a sale in the first week, so which is nice, because obviously I've been promoting it to mm-hmm. people saying, would you like a free copy in return for reviewing it, and someone just came along and bought it, so that was nice.
But this, just to be clear, is a non-fiction book.
It's a non-fiction book, but you do get paid. People have got the option of going and setting up a subscription for $7.99, but they get 30 days free, so they could listen to it free and then unsubscribe again. You get the option to buy it outright, and the amount you get paid is determined on the length of the audio. Mm. So mine's on at £18, which I wouldn't have put it on that high, but they set it for you. So, you know, you could make some serious money if it mm-hmm. took off and got some reviews. And So I would encourage anyone to think about it.
And presumably fiction is the same kind of price.
Yeah, it's all about the length of time.
Because I know that a friend of mine that uses audiobooks a lot, and she has a subscription, and she won't look at an audiobook that's less than 10 hours because she gets one book a month and she wants to make it last for her driving. You know, it's got to last for her drive, and if it's a short one, it won't last her.
Oh, I'm just seven hours. So
so for her, if she's got a subscription and she's paying a few pounds a month for that subscription, and she's deliberately choosing books that are as long as that she possibly can, then her hourly contribution is not necessarily as much as the author's being paid.
So can I ask you, Nicola, your book is 7 hours. What does that translate to in words, approximately? Is there a so many words of written text makes an hour?
I would imagine approximately. It would be, but it would differ for each person because the speed
on the pace
you
of your reading. But just you didn't find an average figure. Well, maybe we'll look that up and see if we can find
but,
that.
But, you know, it just kept bugging me that people could buy it on Kindle or paperback, and I knew that a third of the population would only ever listen to it. So it just it was a painful experience because of the fact that listening to yourself talking back while you're editing is an extremely boring thing, and I did fall asleep sitting up several times.
But well done you for getting it done. And all those tips. So if anybody's got a book that they want to go straight to Audible and cut out all the agents and all of that stuff, then go for it.
And the only other thing is, you can go to fiverr.com, fiverr.com, and there are people on there who will make you a book cover, a very professional.
I was going to ask you about the cover.
And the final tip is really to just leave the bottom right-hand corner of your cover blank, or have a background colour only, because Audible put a big fat logo on there.
Oh, that's right.
So, if you've got any words there, then...
Yeah. Perhaps I could give you a few of the writing tips that I found online, as I say, from our friend Joanna Penn on the Creative Pen.
Excellent. Mm-hmm.
And from Jules Horn, the radio specialist, because there's some similarities in their recommendations. And these are really talking... mostly about fiction, but Joanna Penn says for a non-fiction piece it's best if the author reads it to add authenticity, which is what Nicola's done, while a fiction piece should be read by an actor who can convey the different types of characters. They both say you have to simplify your writing for audiobooks. They both say that. So Joanna says you may need to rework your book as a marked up script where you add natural pauses and emphasize certain words.
Right.
And you may also have to rework clunky sentences. Whereas Jules Horn says the recording whizzes by, and if listeners don't catch something, it's gone. And therefore your writing will thrive on short sentences and an informal register. And she says some writers naturally do this and have a strong focus on rhythm, pace and sonic effects. If you haven't and you want to produce an audio, but you might have to think about your writing.
Yeah.
This was the debate we had last year. Do you have to write differently if you want to go to audio?
But also when we're reading our work aloud for the podcast, we often find, you know, oh, that sentence, you know, where can I breathe? Right. It's a bit long.
Yeah.
So, and we often say it helps your writing to read it out loud. Yeah. So that's something that's really important to be aware of, that, that if somebody's got to actually physically read it aloud, help them a little bit by not making it too awkward.
Yeah. In fact, Jules Horn says, most of us have a writing voice that's more formal and literary than our spoken voice, with longer sentences, which clauses, long subordinate clauses, asides and backflips, which is great in print and ebooks, far less in audio. And she put note, voice artists are true artists, and great ones can even make the telephone directory sound enticing. Oh. But with a true audio-friendly script, the actor will fall in love with the book in their beautifully resonant, gravelly or seductive voice. So, you know, I mean, it's both of these websites, and we'll put the links in, but they're both people that are saying, you know, okay, if you've written a book that's got tight verbs and shorter sentences and isn't too literary, great, so you've probably got something that can go to audio, but you might have to rethink it which is why I commented on Harry Potter and the John le Carré books being so popular, because that they don't really
but I'm thinking in with the Harry Potter that possibly the average listener has already read the book. And also, again, as I've said with our kids, we played the same things over and over again, and it's very familiar. So that it's interesting whether people listen more than once or they've already read the book and know the story. So then they're picking up the detail because they're expecting it, maybe.
And again, the advice that these people are giving is read your work aloud. TCK Publishing, which was another... who's actually an audiobook publisher, they say the very first thing you need to do is a final edit of your manuscript, because making changes to an audiobook after it's published is far more difficult than making and expensive than making changes to an e or print book. So to save yourself a ton of time, money and frustration, make absolutely sure that your book has been professionally edited and proofread, and you are 100% certain it is finished and ready for narration. Send your audiobook script to a narrator before finishing editing is a huge mistake. Now, if you're reading your own book, that's much easier. Yeah, but if you're using somebody else...
But I totally agree, because if I was paying someone else to do it, it would be then expensive to get them to redo it. Mm. I'm really lucky in that I can just edit my audio and re-upload the chapter once it's edited. So don't let... You know, if you're thinking of doing it all yourself, it's actually very easy to make changes.
But also that makes me think, are there editors specifically for audio? So, you know, they're saying get yourself a professional edit, but really you need somebody who specialises in audio to do that kind of specialist edit, don't you? So that would be interesting.
I had to re-record bits for emphasis, because as I was reading them, I was reading, you know, just following the words, as it were, as I was reading. And then I'd think, oh, no, that doesn't put the right emphasis on the right part. So I occasionally had to reread that to get the strength of the feeling and emotion into the bit I wanted to get over to the listener as being important. So that was an interesting experience.
Something that Jules Horn said was, when you hand over your audiobook to a narrator, it essentially becomes a script and is a blueprint for performance. Think of Charles Dickens and his reading tours, when he enthralled a spellbound audience, no mumbling apologetically into a manuscript. This is a mindset shift for many authors, but it really helps. And then she gives a tip, try this. Embrace your inner actor. You know you want to. Put yourself in the narrator's shoes and see it from their perspective. Do your characters have vivid, distinct voices? Are they fun to read? Is their dialogue based on dramatic action that drives the plot, or simply conversation that can be culled? Do you need all those he said, she said? Can you describe a character action instead to build a more detailed, sense-rich picture?
Yeah.
Try using contractions. This is a good one. Record yourself and listen back to the music. Listen out for the rise and fall of the sentence shapes. So what she's saying is, not don't listen to the words, listen to the sound. Right. Yeah. And it may even be that when you record, you can look on the actual recording, you know, where it looks like
the graphical representation.
That might help. So a fascinating Yeah, Madeline, because it does have that punchy dialogue. It does have tight verbs. It has all the things that all of these people
And although you said for fiction hire an actor, I immediately thought unless you're Linda.
Oh yes, Linda is actually the narrator of her story.
Yes,
she's got all the intonations and very. But not all of us are writing, from our own perspective, close to our own perspective.
Right. Well, I do think about it an awful lot about just doing Audible because I doubt that this book would be ever interesting without the accent. If someone else was reading it, say someone in England, they wouldn't get all.
No, you definitely have to choose an actor with your kind of accent. Yeah.
But don't think that your book isn't interesting to people who can't hear the accent. That's not true. Really? We all read. We read books translated from Japanese. We read American books all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not true. Oh,
I don't read American books in an American accent, do you? I just read them as they come.
It depends how they're written. So it depends how they're written, actually. Sometimes the accent is there in the writing. Yeah. But not necessarily, no.
So if you had to choose a narrator for your Brienne series of books, who would you have?
Oh, I don't know.
have you got a voice that you
know? I've not thought about it.
Ranella? So. Who's going to narrate Narella?
Interesting one, isn't it? No, I can't think off the top of my head who I would choose.
I would like Juliet
Stevenson.
Stevenson to narrate Black and Grey.
Yes.
Juliet Stevenson, but she's going to be expensive.
I would want to have Sissy Spacek do mine, who did Coal Miner's Daughter, because I thought she had the accent and all of the emphasis, the intonations. Yeah. It was just beautiful.
Not Whoopi Loretta Goldberg,
Lynn, then. Was that?
No, not Whoopi Goldberg. Just Sissy Spacek would be fabulous.
Yeah, right. She would.
Mm. Well, I think the reason I can't guess is because I've never listened to a fictional audiobook, so I just...
You know how you want Brienne to sound,
No, not really. I'll give it up on Brienne. I was just thinking this morning, that's going to be one of the books that just gets retired into the bottom drawer, and I'll move on to the next one now. Thank you very much, ladies. That was great. So it's almost time to end, but before we go, there's just time for Teresa and Helen Suddards to tell us what's on their bedside table.
Yes, well, I am reading King Leopold's Ghost by Adam Hochschild, with apologies if I've mispronounced his name. And following on from our discussion about narrative non-fiction last week, I think this exemplifies, it's a really good example of that. And there's a quote on the front from Robert Harris, no less, and he says, "All the tension and drama that one would expect in a good novel." So before this, I had read Africa, Biography of a Continent by John Reader, and I spotted this King Leopold's Ghost, a story of greed, terror and heroism in colonial Africa, in a very good bookshop in Dublin when I was there in July. And it's the story of King Leopold of Belgium and how he took control of the Belgian Congo, how he manipulated international diplomacy to gain personal control. It wasn't a colony of Belgium, it was his. It's full of heroes and villains, real-life heroes and villains. King Leopold, of course, being a villain. The heroes include people like Joseph Conrad, who actually travelled up the Congo as a seaman before he wrote Heart of Darkness, and Sir Roger Casement, who I knew very little about before that. I knew the name from sort of Irish history, but a very, very sympathetic and humane character who was a diplomat and part of the British establishment, really, before the Easter Rebellion and so on. So a fascinating book, non-fiction, a great read, but it's a difficult read. There's some gruesome details.
Of what men do to men. Well, thank you very much, Teresa. And Helen Suddards?
And the other thing that, again, I probably wouldn't have by my bedside because it's too heavy and I might knock myself out when it fell on me when I fall asleep, is Anna Jones, The Modern Cook's Year. I'm not someone who sort of like religiously follows recipes, but I do love looking through cookbooks and getting ideas. You know, ideas for flavours that you could incorporate, you know, in other dishes and ideas for dishes. And so Anna Jones, The Modern Cook's Year, is a vegetarian cookbook. And it's really, she writes actually for The Guardian, and a lot of her recipes you can get for free in The Guardian. I don't think most of the recipes that are in this book are not in The Guardian articles. So that's one of the reasons why I bought it. And she just has some really fascinating vegetarian recipes, and some of them much more the thing you might present for a dinner party. Some really easy, you know, day-to-day recipes. So, for instance, she talks about tart tops, I think it's called. And actually, basically, that's combinations of things you can just put on bread for a quick supper. So one of them was like, you grate some beetroot, raw beetroot, you mix it with a bit of goat's cheese and some mustard seeds and a bit of coriander seed and maybe a bit of yogurt, and then spread that on your toast. So she has recipes like that, but then more complicated recipes, you know, for ice cream and this sort of thing. One of the recipes I made, which really was successful with our brood, was they were all coming round for Sunday lunch. One of our daughters, Chloe, is now also a vegetarian. So I made a meat lasagna and a vegetarian lasagna with kale and mushrooms. And I actually cheated because she gives you a recipe for the vegan bechamel. But because obviously I was making bechamel for the meat lasagna, I just made bechamel and used that in the vegetarian lasagna. So I thoroughly recommend it if you want to try some plant-based eating. She's a very good recipe provider and writer, and I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
Thank you, Helen. Thank you for joining us once again. Would you all go over and subscribe to iTunes or Stitcher so every new show is automatically delivered wherever you want it? Do come and join our Facebook group. Just search for Write Club the Podcast. Leave a review on your favourite podcast host and tell a friend about Write Club. We'll be back again next week at the same time for another episode of Write Club the Podcast. Thanks, everyone.
Bye. Bye.